There are two types of dissolution of the manifested cosmos. At the end of every 4,320,000 solar years, when Brahma, the lord of one particular universe, goes to sleep, there is one annihilation. And at the end of Lord Brahma's life, which takes place at the end of Brahma's 100 years of age, in our calculation at the end of 11,640,000,000 times 30 times 12 times 100 solar years, there is complete annihilation of the entire universe. And in both the periods, both the material energy called the Mahatattva and the marginal energy called Jivatattva merge in the person of the Supreme Lord. The living beings remain asleep within the body of the Lord until there is another creation of the material world, and that is the way of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material manifestation. The material creation is affected by the interaction of the three modes of material nature set in action by the Lord, and therefore it is said here that the Lord existed before the modes of material nature were set into motion. In the Shruti Mantra, it is said that only Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, existed before the creation, and there was no Brahma, Shiva, or other demigods. Vishnu means the Mahavishnu who is lying on the caudal ocean. By his breathing, only all the universes are generated in seeds and gradually develop into gigantic forms with innumerable planets within each and every universe. The seeds of universes develop into gigantic forms in the way seeds of a banyan tree develop into numberless banyan trees. This Mahavishnu is the plenary portion of the Lord Sri Krishna, who is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita as follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisance unto the original personality of Godhead Vishnu, whose plenary portion is the Mahavishnu. All the Brahmas, the heads of universes, live only for the period of his exhaling, after the universes are generated from the pores of his transcendental body. Brahma Samhita 158. Thus, Govinda, or Lord Krishna, is the cause of Mahavishnu also. The ladies talking about this very truth must have heard from authoritative sources. An authoritative source is the only means of knowing about transcendental subject matter definitely. There is no alternative. The merging of the living being into the body of Mahavishnu takes place automatically at the end of Brahma's 100 years. But that does not mean that the individual living being loses his identity. The identity is there, and as soon as there is another creation by the Supreme Lord of the world, all these sleeping, inactive living beings are again let loose to begin their activities in the continuation of past different spheres of life. It is called Suptotita Nyaya, or awakening from sleep and again engaging in one's respective continuous duty. When a man is at sleep at night, he forgets himself, what he is, what his duty is, and everything of his waking state. But as soon as he awakens from slumber, he remembers all that he has to do and thus engages himself again in his prescribed activities. Living beings also remain merged in the body of Mahavishnu during the period of annihilation, but as soon as there is another creation, they arise to take up their unfinished work. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 18-20. The Lord existed before the creative energy was set in action. The Lord is not a product of mature energy. His body is completely spiritual, and there is no difference between his body and himself. Before creation, the Lord remained in his abode, which is absolute and one. Translation again. They said, here he is, the original personality of Godhead. As we definitely remember him, he alone existed before the manifested creation of the modes of nature, and in him only, because he is the supreme Lord of all, the supreme Lord, all living beings merged and sleeping at night, their energy suspended.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So the chapter is the departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. And the last text that we read yesterday, we were hearing how the ladies of Hastinapur and the palace were at the rooftops and offering their heartfelt prayers to Lord Krishna. And as we hear from the prayers of Queen Kunti, she explains that those who are no longer afflicted by material desires can actually be able to approach Krishna with sincere feeling. So those who are not bewildered by their janma, by their shruti, the beauty of their offerings, they can actually approach Krishna with sincere feeling. Janma Ishvara Shrita Shubhya, Eyamana Madhakunam, Nava Hartya Vidatum Vaya, Tama Kinchana Gochanam. That only these persons who actually have no attraction to material activities, they can actually approach Krishna with sincere heart and sincere feeling. And the ladies are addressing Krishna in the previous text as Uttama Shloka. So Krishna is praised by choice verses, by selected verses from the Shruti text of the Vedic literature. So Lord Krishna is Uttama. So the word Ut means one who has gone to the other side of Tama. So Krishna is beyond material existence. This material existence is mainly ignorance. So Krishna is Uttama. He is beyond that ignorance. Therefore we glorify him in Vedic hymns. We praise him in that manner. So this verse is very much speaking about creation. It is speaking about the position of the jiva, the material energy, and the position of Krishna. Everything, of course, is emanating from Krishna. And most importantly, it is expressing how the living entity and God, the Supreme Person, they always have their separate individual identity. And Prabhupada uses that example that we may be in a state of sleeping at night, and then after that we wake up again and we regain our activities. So although we merge at the end of Brahma's day and at the end of Brahma's life, we merge into the body of the Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, we are not there eternally. That naturally the cycle of creation, maintenance, and annihilation goes on by the will of Krishna. And those living entities who have not perfected their lives, they remain in a state of slumber within the body of the Lord. And at the time of the next creation, those living entities, they come out again and they resume their activities. So we're actually never annihilated. We are never in an inactive state eternally. We may be put in a state of slumber, but eventually we awaken from the slumber and we engage in our activities, because this world means work. We accrue our good and bad karma, and respectively nature prescribes certain bodies to continue with that karmic cycle as long as we remain bound. So what is important here as well is to understand that these devotees of Krishna, these ladies in Hastinapur, they are basing everything that they're saying on the Shruti, from hearing. So we understand that there's different bona fide ways of hearing. Shabda Brahman is very important. So they have heard from their authorities about the glories of Krishna. And Prabhupada would normally say that if we want to know who our father is, we ask the mother. In this day and age, hopefully the mother will know who the father is. And sometimes the mother doesn't know who the father is. Maybe some of you who are very, who are one of very pious families may not be aware of this. But sometimes children do not know who their fathers are, because of the degraded age of because of the degraded age of Kali Yuga, there is no proper protection to the woman class. So the women, in the name of independence, they allow themselves to be exploited. They act in unchaste ways, and therefore there's so much unwanted population to punish them. So here, though, in the Bhagavatam, we get to understand and we get to see how the proper means of attaining perfection comes through the process of hearing from a bona fide source, hearing from the Shruti mantras, which are explained to be like the mother and Krishna. Of course, we understand Krishna is the father of all the entities. So we hear from the Shruti, we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in that way we get to gradually understand our relation to Him. And on this point of how much we've been time and time again going through this process of annihilation, creation, maintenance, traveling from the lowest region to the topmost region in the material universe. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it explains how the living entity is has been going perpetually, traveling in this Brahmanda, in this material existence, going from the lowest planet to the highest planet, changing bodies, but eventually by the mercy of a pure devotee, that he actually ends that cycle and he starts to develop his devotion towards Lord Krishna. So the first, the verse is Paramandara Pramite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasad Paya Bhakti Natavish. That the new entity is always going through this repeated birth and death, going to the upper planetary systems, going to the middle, going to the lower planetary systems. And somehow or other, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, he gets the seed of devotion. And that seed of devotion is what will take us out of this cycle of samsara. That is what will take us out of the ignorance of material existence. Well, material existence basically means ignorance. There's no knowledge. So by coming into contact with authoritative sources of the Vedic literature, of Vedic culture, we're actually given some light, we're given some knowledge about Krishna, the Supreme Person. And by constantly hearing, by developing some faith, we hear more and more about Krishna. And we accept Krishna and his energies, we accept Krishna and his potencies. For someone who does not have faith, it is very difficult to understand that the living entities, the Mahatattva, at the end of Brahma's day, or at the end of his life, living entities merge into a body of a Mahavishnu who is lying on an ocean, and they remain there till the next creation. So for someone who does not have faith in the qualities and the attributes of Krishna, they cannot accept these facts from the Vedic literatures. That is why sometimes people say, the Vedas, they are nice stories, they are nice allegories. And there's some nice similes, there's some proverbs in there. It is very nice, but they actually don't take it seriously because they have not awakened their shraddha, they haven't awakened their faith, they're still in the mode of ignorance. And that is what, although they may be seemingly, sometimes Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavatam, especially in the later cantos, Prabhupada explains in so many purports, 6th, 7th, 8th canto, Prabhupada explains that sometimes it seemingly looks like people in material existence, they are in knowledge and they are happy. It seems like that. And sometimes people look like they are in the mode of goodness from an external point of view. Like there, you go to their house and it looks very, very clean. They're vegetarian sometimes. They have a compassionate side to them. So from an external point of view, it seemingly looks like they are very happy, there's not much suffering going on. But we understand that as long as one has no knowledge of Krishna, actually they're in ignorance. Even if externally they look like they're happy or they look like they have a comfortable situation, but it is actually ignorance. Like a child may walk out and think that he's free, but he walks out this room, he has a whole temple to enjoy. So he has the street, there's the car, and there's no one. So he thinks, this is it, this is my opportunity to enjoy. So I have all the freedom I have in the world, and I'm going to take the plants out and spray them on the wall, and drop some flowers into the pond, and take the flowers and splatter them in the reception, and scribble up some paper, and this is freedom, there's no one that can do what I want. But actually, it will not lead to any higher consciousness, because that is what the living entity does. Krishna, by his mercy, arranges a playground called the material world. Now Krishna, when he does this, Krishna is doing it through his different shaktis. So Krishna creates all the material elements in their unmanifested state. He creates the pradhanas there. All the material elements are there in their gross and subtle form. The element of time is there. The modes of material nature are there. And then Krishna glances over and impregnates all the jivas. And then activity begins. So Krishna creates all these different universes, all these different fields of activity, and He does it for our enjoyment, because we want to enjoy separately. So Krishna provides that. And then we're there, we're enjoying, and we're thinking we can be happy because we have our playground. No one can stop us. We have our field, we have our body, we have our intelligence, we have our good looks, we have our permanent residence in the lucky country, Australia, so you don't have to worry about anything else. We have a good job, so you don't have to try and understand who Krishna is. But as long as we do that without the Supreme Court of all causes in the center of our lives, actually it is all ignorance. Then that is a life based on ignorance. Anything done without Krishna or without the consciousness of having Krishna as the supreme enjoyer in our sacrifices, then it is ignorance. Then there is no value to our activities. There's actually no value to anything we do if we don't put Krishna as the center. Like the acharyas say, it's like a drop of water in the desert. There's no value. But once you put Krishna in the center, then there is value. This material world only has value and it is attractive because Krishna is there as the super soul. And Krishna has expanded his energies, and that is the only way that the material world can become, has value. So the living entities, they are Krishna's emotional energy. So Krishna is there with every single living entity. Krishna is in every single atom. Can't you two explain this? So wherever there is Krishna, there is value. So the attraction that we feel for each other, the attraction that is there in the material world, that element is Krishna. Now if we separate Krishna from that, then we're living a life of ignorance. If we separate Krishna from his material creations, we're living a life of ignorance. But if we see that all these energies are actually coming from Krishna, then we have some knowledge. Now we might think, well, how is it that, you know, it sometimes may look contradictory that this Krishna, this person called Krishna, is in the material world at the same time he's not in the material world. He has a Satchidananda form. Krishna's body, every single expansion of Krishna is actually Satchidananda, although he manifests in the material sphere. But he's actually not touched by the laws of material nature. So sometimes it looks like, yes, Krishna is in the heart of the living entities, he's in every atom through his expansions, and at the same time we're saying he's not in the material world. He's in the material world, but he's not in the material world. Nectar of Devotion explains that in the qualities of Krishna, Krishna's name is Dhirodatta. Then you have Krishna who is Dhiralalita, he's Dhiradatta. And in there, Srila Prabhupada explains that the Supreme Person occupies all types of qualities, all types of traits, because he is supreme, nothing is without him. So Krishna, sometimes this Dhiradatta quality is explained as someone who is envious, someone who is mischievous, someone who is temperamental. And these are qualities pertaining to Krishna, but the acharyas explain that these are supremely attractive, and only Krishna can actually make these qualities attractive. So sometimes Krishna, he will act, for example, in his lila with Kalyavan, Krishna will call him an ugly snake, or he will deride his birth, or he will make fun of certain personalities as having deformed bodies. There's so many different ways Krishna speaks, but the acharyas are explaining that he possesses all these, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all these qualities manifest in full and they are attractive to all the entities. So Krishna's childhood leelas, they actually are attractive to everyone. And just as we are attracted to these pastimes of Krishna, we should also be attracted to Krishna's pastimes of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Understand the supremacy of Krishna. Because if we don't understand how great Krishna is, we might take him very cheaply. we might think him to be a normal personality. So by understanding how Krishna has so many different expansions, so many different shaktis, different energies, how he doesn't get implicated in the material sphere, then we develop much more appreciation for Krishna. That is why we are advised to read Srimad Bhagavatam from beginning to end. In the beginning, we are hearing all about Krishna's incarnations, Krishna's creation, so many different energies of Krishna. And later on, we get into the rasas of Krishna. Of course, there's mention of that in the beginning. In the beginning, there's more the tattva of Krishna, reinstating Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by studying his different potencies, his different energies. And once we develop maturity in understanding these Vedic conclusions, we appreciate the person Krishna more and we accept him as supreme. So when we hear of Krishna's pastimes lifting Govardhan Hill, or Krishna playing with the gopis, we are not bewildered. We're not thinking this is a mundane relationship between boy and girl. We understand it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is Rasaraj. He is the reservoir of all, he's the king of all types of rasas. So he exhibits all these rasas at any point, in any point of his boyhood or youth. Krishna exhibits all types of rasas to attract his different devotees. So these ladies in Hastinapur, they're basing their knowledge on Shruti, and they are the Shruti mantras, of course, they are spoken by Mukta Purushas. These are personalities who are not affected by material incompetency. These are called Mukta Purushas. So when the Vedic texts were revealed into the heart of Brahma, they were revealed in their pure state by Krishna himself, and later on recorded in the Parampara in a disciplined succession. And these Mukta Purushas, of course, they're not like us who have so many incompetencies, the four defects of the conditioned souls, committing mistakes, being illusioned, having a cheating propensity, and having imperfect senses. So anything that falls in those categories can actually be a Mukta Purusha. So the Shruti, the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita itself is spoken by Krishna. It is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Arjuna. And the Bhagavatam, it has been heard in a disciplic succession by personalities who are pure in consciousness. So everything has been given as it is. Therefore, when we say we're following Krishna consciousness, we're actually retaining all these Vedic truths in essence without watering down or without changing or manifesting any so-called new truth. And material, right now in the world, there's so many up-and-coming new faiths. And someone discovers he has enlightenment and he discovers what life is about out of nowhere. Or someone rediscovers what the actual meaning of this text in a different faith is, etc. So a materially afflicted person tries to concoct karma or tries to recreate what's already been produced by Krishna. And that's where you have all these self-explanatory or these new age dharmas coming up. Read a little bit of the Torah, read a little bit of the Old Testament, read a little bit of the Gita, of the Quran, and then you come up with your own thing. So this is a mental concoction, this is cheating propensities. But we make everything, Srila Prabhupada has taught that whatever we do, we actually always keep it in line with what he has given in his books, as it has been presented by his spiritual master, by Shastra as well. But only the as Prabhupada would say, only the fools and rascals will change the Vedic literature or will edit the Vedic literatures. The Narayana's Bhagavad has Prabhupada would explain. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains what type of persons will actually not surrender to him. Those who are in the world of ignorance, what type of persons won't actually accept the very truth. So in chapter 7, 10, 15, these types of persons listed in Bhagavad Gita, they do not approach Krishna. They do not accept Krishna. And it is based on the ignorance coming out in the form of false ego. But only those who surrender to Krishna, after traveling through different lifetimes, some will surrender unto Krishna, Vasudev, and make Vasudev their life and soul. So those type of persons accept Krishna, and the other types, the four types of people in the 7th chapter, text 15, those four types of people, they do not surrender to Krishna. So Krishna, here, in the previous verse, it was said that Krishna is Sarva Shruti Manohari. Sarva Shruti Manohari. And Krishna is very pleasing to hear. So the more we hear about Krishna, the more pleasing it is for all, for our senses. So not only for our mind, our intelligence, but it is most pleasing for the jiva, the soul inside the body, who is eternally connected with Krishna. So we're all different, we're like sparks emanating from a fire. We are coming from Krishna, we're different parts of Krishna. Prabhupada would term it part and parcel of Krishna. So we can't actually ever be eternally separated from Krishna. Even if we're in ignorance, even if we want to be eternally separated from Krishna, the factual truth is we'll always be dependent on Krishna. Material creation means dependence. Right? We have these material bodies, so we're depending on Krishna. We're depending on Krishna externally for the sunlight, for the moon, for food, for so many different things. We depend on Krishna to survive. We get jobs. We work. We have to maintain ourselves, our families, etc. And there are some people who deny that they are actually very, very independent. But they are depending. Every day they work, they serve their master. A master that they do not like. A master who exploits them. And that is the demon. That is the demonic mentality. To serve an unworthy master who is averse to the Vedic tradition. Prabhupada makes it very clear in the Bhagavad Gita that there's two classes of people. You're either divine or demoniac. And demoniac doesn't mean that you have red horns on your forehead, or that you walk around with a trident. That's not the definition of being demoniac. Demoniac means you do not accept the authority of the mother and the father. You don't accept the authority of Krishna and of his Vedic texts, the Shruti matters. So, and there is no in between. But sometimes, you know, we like to kind of be 50-50. Like, yeah, I understand, but I don't. There's actually no in between. You either accept Krishna or you just don't accept Krishna. That's what Prabhupada means. We're either David, we either have demigod qualities, or we're Asuric. We do not accept Krishna. So those are the two classes of people. And we see this going on in Anandi Bhagavatam. There's always these two classes of personalities. So we'll always see the demonic mentality clashing with the Vedic mentalities. So in the 8th canto, we'll always see the demons trying to cheat the demigods, trying to maneuver different illusions, to try and enjoy the nectar, to try and get the to try and get theta, or to try and enjoy Krishna's property, it's going on perpetually in an ongoing struggle. There's always a battle between the demons and the demigods. So there's always these two classes of persons in material existence. And we just choose which one we want to fall under. Do we want to be directly under Krishna's care, or do we want to be indirectly under Krishna's care? To be indirectly under Krishna's care means that we get taught the hard way. Material creation means we have to do a little bit of suffering before we actually accept Krishna. So the external energy is not meant to make us happy. In case we were thinking that we can become happy in the material world, it's not possible. The only happiness that one can experience in while living in this material world is the happiness of bhakti or devotional service. Any other type of thing, it is a cessation of distress. I'm not suffering that much, therefore I'm happy. So I'm not, you know, in the deserts, in Somalia, in Mogadishu, you have people, approximately 500 people dying every day. Right? There's no water, there's no food, there's no aid, nothing like that. So compared to lifestyle in Australia or in America, people think, oh yes, I'm happy, I'm not going through that. I have my clean running water, I have fresh clothing, I'm happy. But we're all still going through the same thing. We're all born. Birth means death. And we're all born, we're going to die. We're going to experience some level of disease in old age. So wherever you're born in this world, you're going to experience these miseries. These are actually miseries of being in the material world. And only one who can actually see through these miseries can become happy. And there's no way anyone can become happy without developing a higher taste. So this higher taste is understanding the relationship between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. Because our happiness actually lies in serving Krishna. So as Christ would say, we can live in this world but not be of it. So we don't have to become so bewildered by all the havoc that's going on in the material creation. We know it's going to be there. A devotee has knowledge, a devotee understands what this material energy is supposed to do. So we're not always up in arms protesting against the bad weather and why we have tsunamis, etc., etc. We understand Dukkha and Shashvatam. This material world, it is always, it's tempered. Things are always changing. The only constant thing is Krishna. Krishna is the only constant. Krishna and his service will always be there. Everything else will fall apart. Your body is going to fall apart. Your house might fall apart. Your car will break down. So many things. But sometimes when these things are going well, we might think, I'm alright, it will never happen to me. As Prabhupada said, don't think this won't happen to you. Now we took birth, we are going to die. So this is a lifetime of preparation for a glorious death. So when Krishna is not under our vision, sometimes it is said that the Jiva has, you know, we're dead because our life and soul is not there, Krishna. But we must learn how to connect deeply with Krishna. We do not need to see Krishna to know that he is there. I was reading in the 8th canto, Prabhupada explaining how when the demigods go to the ocean of milk in the material universe, in the spiritual planet, that the demigods The god Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, is aiding them. So Lord Brahma and Shiva, and they are offering prayers to Mahavishnu, but they do not actually see Mahavishnu. They can't see him, but the Lord will respond, they will hear him. So we're not all about just seeing Krishna. Oh, I can't see God, that means he's not there. That is a foolish mentality. So if the demigods themselves, they approach the milk ocean and they are offering prayers, and in the beginning they do not see, because they do not see Mahavishnu, they just hear him and they are pacified. The Lord gives them instruction, yes, I will come, be patient, etc. Or the gopis, they do not see Krishna sometimes, they just hear him. So hearing is actually very powerful. Hearing about Krishna is very, very purifying, it is very powerful. It is enough to keep us going till we get to our destination. So when we hear the holy name, that is why he said that the holy name is Chintamani, is attached. So when we hear the holy name, we gradually, over time, Namarupa Guna Lila, this will all manifest. The potency of the holy name will understand who Namaprabhu is, will understand Krishna's qualities, will see Krishna, and will enter into Krishna's pastime. And this starts with hearing, this starts with Shabda. It is very important that we are hearing about Krishna from the right sources. You do not go ask the street sweeper who your father is, you ask your mother, and your mother will tell you who your father is. So we have to approach the right source, not our mind, not our emotions. We approach Krishna and his representatives. So the only way that we're actually getting out of this Brahmanda, the only way we're actually getting out of this material existence, which is Prabhupada explained, it's like situated in the sky, a little corner in the sky, is by getting the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And that way we get given a higher taste implanted in our heart, and we practice bhakti, devotional service. And by practicing devotional service, we can get out of this material creation. We don't have to get involved with the three modes of material nature. We don't have to get involved with the time aspect, past, present, and future. We get to escape the stringent laws of material nature. So because Krishna is the only person who is, not the only person, the jivas are actually pure, they have nothing to do with matter. Krishna eternally remains Sanchit Ananda. He is eternally Atmarama, the living entity in his conditioned state forgets that he is also Atmarama. In the Atmarama verse given by Lord Chaitanya, he explains it in so many different ways, and he also explains that the living entity is also Atmarama, self-satisfied, that his satisfaction lies in Krishna. And by serving Krishna, he is satisfied. So once we understand that, we can actually break out of this cycle of continuously wandering up and down. So the secret, as Prabhupada would say, the secret of success in Krishna consciousness is to follow the instructions given by those who have seen Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, it says, Tadvi Pranipatina, Hari Prashtana Sevaya, Uperitari Devana, Dhanya Sattva Darshana, that as you had darshan of Krishna. And that is why they continue to preach the glories of Krishna and establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's only one Krishna. Ekala Ishvara Krishna. There's one Ishvara, and his name is Krishna. Arasava Kritya. Everyone else is a servant. Mohandas Gandhi is a servant, Adolf Hitler is a servant, Sachin Tendulkar is a servant, everyone is a servant. but there's only one Ishvara, and that is Krishna. As long as we deny that, then we're in ignorance. It's very simple. But when we accept Krishna, Prabhupada said, you accept Krishna, follow the nine processes of bhakti, and your life will be perfect. You're on your way back to Krishna. So it won't, we shouldn't be impatient and think that it's not happening yet. How many people here have their degrees in whatever, engineering, arts? Who here has a degree? Okay, most of you have a degree. Master's degree? Who has a master's? Okay. PhD? Any PhD students here? Yeah, okay. So most of us will have a master's degree. Now, how long did it take? Did it take 2 weeks to get your master's? 2 months?
Couple of years.
Couple of years. Okay. So it took a couple of years. So you know when you come to Krishna consciousness after you take initiation, that is just the beginning. So we're still in kindergarten. At least that's it for myself. You see that little baby there? That is us in devotional service. We should always think that we're still beginners. And gradually over time, by hearing and chanting, we advance spiritually. But that won't happen over 2 weeks just as much as our master's or PhD do not happen over 2 months. And sometimes it's our frustration and thinking, why am I not a pure devotee now? It's been 10 years. Or it's been 20 years, it's been 30 years. Why am I not crying when I chant? Why are the hairs on my body not standing up when I chant Hare Krishna? There's something wrong. Sometimes you may think like this. There's something wrong. It's not real, it's not true, I've been cheated. But we should read the Bhagavatam and understand actually what we've been doing. And it might take a very, very long time of just chanting Hare Krishna. That we've been conditioned by 8.4 million different species of life. So our subtle, there's still so much aparada consciousness in there, unmanifested activities in here from countless births. So what we need to do is keep chanting Hare Krishna, keep serving. It won't happen over 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So if anyone ever offers you a self-realization course and promise you to be self-realized in 2 months, you should reject it. Because there's no such thing. You should understand you've been wandering in this material universe for a very, very long time. Prabhupada says since time immemorial. We actually can't trace it. So we should understand that it will take some time for the living entity to properly be reinstated as a servant of Krishna. Philosophically we understand it, but now it has to become a natural propensity. This is why it's important to always hear the text of Srimad Bhagavatam, because they make us understand what we have to see in the material world, how to see Shastra in the material world, how everything is working. And through understanding that, we get purified. We dissolve our material subtle body. It becomes purified. And then we can see Krishna everywhere. Pandita Samadarshana. Then we'll be able to see Krishna in everyone's heart, in every living entity's heart. So the more you read about Krishna, the more you develop your faith, your shraddha, and the more you'll be able to see who you are in relation to Krishna. So these ladies in Hastinapur, they have heard about the glories of Krishna, and now they are glorifying Krishna, Uttama Shloka. So by constantly glorifying Krishna, we will become purified. So I'll stop there and ask if there's any comment or question.
it's explained that the soul's always active in the even while sleeping, where it's on the mental platform, dreaming is going on. Is that same thing happen when the soul's emerging to the body of our ship? Is there someone dreaming there, or even the dreaming is
What I've read from the second canto, that everything is actually suspended. But then I have heard through Bhanu Swami that during that period, in whatever universe it is in, that there's a little subset of a meaning creation where Krishna appears and the living entities go there within that slumber period. So I'm not sure where he read that, or where I couldn't get the reference. But from my understanding from these different characters in creation, that the living entities, they are put on hold. Like everything is just put on stop until the next creation for that particular universe. So everything stops, because then in the purpose program I explained that then after when there's the next creation, then everything, they continue from where they left off. So everyone will still have their karma, and from where they left off, they immediately pick up. So which means in the interim phase, there's no activity. They actually do not act until the next creation, and then they go on with their karmic activities. So everything actually stops. But even in their sleep, their entities, sometimes they destroy karma when they're sleeping. So in the state of slumber, there's no... It's like a deep sleep, there's no dreaming at all.
And you're explaining how the living is part of parcel, and that the parcel can never be separated from Krishna for, you know, a very long time. So does that mean all the jivas eventually go back to Godhead? Or is it possible that you can remain in the material world? Or actually,
it's possible that you may remain in the material world, creation after creation. Prabhupada makes that point when he makes the distinction between the Nitya Siddha and the Nitya Bada, that you have the living entities who are eternally, how do you say it? They're eternally in the material creation. Now we could say that some of us were probably Nitya Bada, we're meant one to be in forgetfulness of Krishna for a very, very long time. But Prabhupada would say eventually, somehow or the other, they will get an opportunity to get in contact with Krishna again. But in general, Prabhupada did say some of the entities will remain in this material world forever. That is their desire. So it is a little bit difficult to understand if we're all bound to the path of Krishna, and then we're eternally separated from Krishna. But that eternal separation means that we're eternally separated in our congenial relationship with Krishna, that our rasa has been suspended. We are inimical towards Krishna, because that is still everything. We're still indirectly connected with Krishna, but not directly. So we cut ourselves. It's like a child who runs away from home. A child runs away from home. You know, he has his name, his last name. If anything happens, they contact his parents. Although he himself has, you know, ostracized himself and his family eternally. Some people is like that. That's what their life is like. So they're not really eternally disconnected. There's always a connection. But for some period, Prabhupada said, some living entities still be in the material world for almost eternity.
And then we see sometimes the pure devotee can like override that desire for something material, like vacillate that desire that all the living entities in the universe get liberated.
Yeah, he gets all that karma.
And we'll see, you don't have to take that, you know, just by your desire to be liberated. It seems like the pure devotee can like override
Yeah, that is why Krishna says if you worship of his pure devotees higher than worshipping him, because his pure devotees control him and they are extremely merciful. Abhrati, Tanya, and Lord Chinanda, they are even more merciful than Krishna, although he is Lord Krishna himself. And when Lord Brahma gave those benedictions to Hiranyakashipu, the Lord didn't come to interfere with that benediction. No, he didn't go to Brahma and say, okay, fine, I'm going to reverse this. Like, he kept what Lord Brahma had said to Hiranyakashipu. So sometimes it's in Krishna's nature that he doesn't interfere with the kind-heartedness or the extremely compassionate nature of his pure devotees. So we see, you know, Vasudeva Datta, even some devotees who've been in ISKCON, they've had that same mood. His oldest Bhakti Kesa Swami was in that same mood of Vasudeva Datta. He prayed that he would be able to absorb the karma of his disciples so that it can become easier for them to practice Krishna consciousness. And in that same year, that's when he had that cancer and he left the planet. So the pure devotee is extremely powerful, that he can give benedictions and Krishna will not get involved, or Krishna will not mess with those benedictions. He will allow it because Krishna is controlled by the pure devotee. So even if, you know, we see Narada Muni, he's just always making devotees, even in the most hellish situations. Or he will curse them and say, Krishna will come and liberate you. And Krishna is forced to do that because Narada Muni, his devotion to Krishna is so strong that Krishna agrees. You know, with the twin Arjuna trees, you know, they got cursed, Manigriva and Alakugar. Narada Muni cursed them, but the blessing was that Krishna will come and deliver you. And Krishna agreed to that. There's no question about Krishna agreeing to anything his pure bhakta says, his pure devotee says. So when we come into Krishna's rasa, you know, it changes everything. You know, he has this tattva as the Supreme Personality of God, the omnipotent, all-powerful, you know, like a jet, like it's Narayan, you don't mess with him. But when you bring his pure devotees in, Krishna acts differently. He's like, you know, the judge at home, his kid is, you know, riding on his back, like Prabhupada would say. With Krishna, with Govinda, his heart becomes bound by a devotee's love. So with his pure devotees, Krishna changes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.